This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Iraqis vote in droves. McCain tortures Bush. The big Patriot Act filibuster plus. Is that just static on the line, or is Uncle Sam listening to your call? Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of the political spectrum from Maui today, where I guess he's doing some deep investigative journalism, is our own Robert Scheer, syndicated columnist based at the San Francisco Chronicle and editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. On the right, from Washington as always, is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor and columnist for The Washington Times and author of The West's Last Chance, Will We Win the Clash of Civilizations? And here with me in Santa Monica is Arianna Huffington from the independent progressive blogosphere, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Welcome all from across the time zones. Bob, hope the weather in Maui is good. I guess that's the right question to ask, right?
It's beautiful, but I have to leave today. Sorry.
We share your pain, Bob. Mm-hmm. The big news this week, in a very busy week, was the Iraqi vote. 11 million of the 15 million eligible voters, it looks like, went out to vote, including Sunnis, who have been voluntarily or in various ways excluding themselves from the political process till now. That means a 70% turnout, well above what we consider good. Tony Blankley, I guess we should start with the right, since this is a week where those of us who have held some hope for Iraq probably feel some promise. What do you make of it?
Well, of course, it's a hopeful sign. It's the third vote in the year. In the face of suicide and other terrorist attacks, and it obviously shows the strong commitment of the Iraqi people to the political process to form a government rather than the violent process. As everybody says, it's not going to end the violence, but to the extent that the Sunnis are engaged, it may help withdraw the Sunni Ba'athist component of the violence, and that would be very good news. That would leave primarily the foreign terrorists who are already vastly unpopular in Iraq and holds out some hope for success in the future.
I want to get Bob and Ari in, but just what happens now? It's going to take some weeks before we even know who won, and then they have to do the kind of dance of coalition government forming?
Yes, I mean, it's going to be a long vote count because they're not fully automated the way we were in Florida in 2000. And then you'll have something that will sort of look like the German forming of a government. It'll take some weeks for the various coalitions to cobble together agreements, and then they're going to be at that point able to form a government. So we could be looking at several weeks or a month or two perhaps before you have a functioning government.
So, Bob Scheer, a great day for democracy?
Well, we all favor elections. You know, I favor them in Venezuela, even though Chavez wins and the U.S. supported a boycott of that election. I favored them in Iran, even though a candidate won who seems to be quite militant, and I certainly don't agree with him. So, yes, I prefer elections. I wish the Bush administration recognized that elections are a good means and should support them around the world, but we have to be aware that the consequences may not be the ones we want. For example, the election right now in the West Bank that has taken place, Hamas, the militant group, captured 73% of the vote in Nablus, and Fatah only captured 11%. So militants can use elections, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen in Iraq. The Sunni vote, from the reporting that I've read, represents a fairly militant a vote. The Shiite vote, which will dominate, and as we've seen before, is a vote for a variant of theocracy. And so I think the Bush administration has got to be prepared that elections are a means to an end. They don't necessarily produce the ends that the Bush administration wants, but yes, we should respect it, and it's a very good alternative to continued fighting.
So before I get Ariana in, doesn't this, I mean, when you've got 11 million out of 15 million people who are eligible going to the polls, you've talked a lot on the show about letting people make their own history. Isn't this a way in which we've enabled Iraqis to try and make their own history?
Well, you know, I don't know if you would take that position in Iran, for example, where clearly there was an election every bit as free, I guess one could argue quite a bit more free, than in Iraq. And yet, unfortunately, the Iranian people voted for someone that you and I and even Bush would consider very bad, very dangerous, and ultimately not a friend of democracy. So, yes, it's a good thing to have elections. The problem, as we know, is that elections are a means to an end. They don't necessarily produce a good end. And there has to be struggle. The problem in Iraq right now is that we have created a situation of religious war. And better to have that war fought out at the ballot box than in the streets and with guns. But I'm afraid that a Shiite victory, which seems to be in the cards here, and a Sunni Muslim but religious faction in the opposition is a prescription for civil war. But yes, the short answer is election better. Your question you're asking is, were we right to accept false information, a lie about a tie to Al-Qaeda, and to go into Iraq and that we make it better? No, we have not made it better, and I don't think we should go around the world intervening in people's history. But once having made a mess of it, it's better to have elections than to have just fighting, yes.
Well, at least you got to where I was headed. Go ahead, Ariana.
No, I did get to where you were heading.
Let Ariana talk,
no, Matt, I would point out you supported this war based on false information, so our democracy. Our democracy did not work. That's what's really at issue.
Ariana Huffington.
Well, I have no problem celebrating the fact that over 70% of Iraqis turned up to vote without taking back anything I have said for months against this war. I think what is...
But we don't get the election without the war, right?
Yeah, but I mean, there's no question that not for 1 second. Does the election justify the war? I mean, in terms of... the life sacrificed, in terms of the treasure sacrificed, and in terms of the long-term results, because we don't know what this is going to lead to. Basically, is it going to lead to a transitional government of transitional strongmen like Alawi and Chalabi? And the problems that Bob raised in terms of the potential for a civil war between the Shiites and the Sunnis are just as strong despite the election. That's the tragedy here. So let's celebrate the fact that they turned out to vote, but let us also remember that over two-thirds of the Iraqi people have said that they consider the American presence, the presence of an occupying force, and that they want the American military gone.
Tony?
Well, I found it interesting that Mr. Scherer, I think if I don't want to quote him miscorrectly, said that this doesn't justify the war in the first place. Here we have, after only 4 years, a budding democracy with the polls coming out of there showing that I believe over 70% of Iraqis are optimistic, looking forward to a better life, positive about their future. And we've got rid of a terrible dictator and may have a democracy born in the middle of an area that has no democracy other than Israel's. And that's apparently not worth the effort we've made. I think it's vastly worth the effort.
You know, just one quick point here, Tony. Since we celebrate democracy and we celebrate people's wishes, why are you ignoring the fact that over two-thirds of Iraqis are also wishing the American military gone? Isn't that something we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I'm not ignoring that at all. All I'm saying is that, and frankly, as a conservative, I find it delightful to listen to liberals be so diffident about democracy and so hesitant and so unwilling to see it advanced at any particular price. I think this is all doing damage to the general left side of the equation domestically in America.
Tony, this is nonsense, and you know it. What I've said very clearly is I prefer elections to fighting. I prefer them in Venezuela, I prefer them in Iran, and I prefer them in Iraq. And so, yes, elections are a good thing. As opposed to the Bush administration, I don't think the Venezuelan election should have been boycotted. I would point out to you the parties that we support, the Bush administration supports in Venezuela, boycott an election because Chavez is popular. Okay?
But you said
in Iran, wait a second. In Iran, a regime that was elected in an election certainly as fair as the one in Iraq, with a very big vote, is one we call a rogue nation, and we say a building nuclear weapons and we may go to war with. So all I'm pointing out is that elections are a means to an end. They don't get you where you want. And I'm worried about the Bush administration, number one. Secondly, it does not do a service to democracy to lie to the American people to get them to war, because we were not told the reason to go there is to have elections of some sort. We were told this is to prevent the rise of Islamic fundamentalism led by al-Qaeda. What has happened in Iraq is exactly the opposite end. We took a secular country that had no ties to al-Qaeda, and we have created a recruiting camp in there for two kinds of Islamic, two kinds of Islamic fundamentalism. We have created a base for the Shiite fundamentalism sponsored by Iran, and we've created a base for the al-Qaeda fundamentalists in Iraq. And I know 5 months from now you will not say that the elections were produced a result that you liked.
I want us to move on.
You have more than repeated your first statement, but I just want to know whether you, if I was correct in understanding that you don't think that the war was worth the result. Is that your position?
The war has created a base for Islamic fanaticism in Iraq, and no, it certainly was not the reason we went towards the opposite result of the one that was anticipated.
We'll watch
the record
out.
So reflect.
We'll watch this in the weeks ahead. A stunning turnabout on Thursday this week, where after intense bipartisan congressional pressure, President Bush reversed course on Thursday and reluctantly backed Senator John McCain's call for a law banning cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment of prisoners in American custody. In one of these classic kind of minuets of political co-optation, Bush had McCain down to the White House for a photo op, thanked him for, you know, his leadership on a bill that he had resisted for months, and has sort of signed on and gotten ahead of the parade. Just a minute or so before we break to cover this or start it. But, Tony, what do you make of this turnaround?
It's an ill-considered piece of legislation. Bush, I understand the both domestic and international politics of it. Once the issue had been raised, we probably had to agree to this legislation. But in fact, the fact that even McCain recognizes the ticking time bomb exception implies that there's some value in coerced interrogation, and if this law denies us that ability, then we may someday regret the fact that we weren't able to get the information in time to save thousands of American lives.
Ariana?
It is a minor humiliation of the vice president, which is
always fun.
Which is always fun, yes. Who actually resisted more than anybody publicly this particular bill. And it's a great victory for John McCain, who has, in my opinion, done way too much genuflecting towards the administration, so he's getting some little reward now.
And what is this actually? It limits. What is the exception that it provides? Right, I was trying to understand.
The ticking time bomb. McCain recognized, although he didn't want to make it legal, he recognized that we would probably excuse any government interrogator, U.S. government interrogator, who had to use basically coerced interrogation, presumably in violation of the statute, which commonly is being called torture, to get information imminently before a terrible terrorist attack, although it would still be illegal for the government interrogator to do so. But McCain was counting on the goodwill of the politicians afterwards. My point being that he is thereby admitted that there is utility in coerced interrogation, and then the question remains whether it is wise to deny our agents that procedure where it might be necessary to protect our lives. And so I think that it is not right to deny them that procedure.
And so what it does, and Bob, I want to get you into this, so what it does in the legal sense, right, it provides that defense as an excuse when they're criminally prosecuted. This brings me back to my law school days, but it is a kind of nice, almost hypocritical solution where the official rule bars this, and that's our principle, but it may be that there are some very tiny set of circumstances where we'll let people off. Bob?
Yeah, I mean, to use Tony's phrase, let the record show that he thinks cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment of prisoners is necessary to preserve the security of a free society.
Let the record reflect that clearly.
Yes, and what McCain is arguing is that it should be the stated position of the U.S. government and those who work for it that such behavior is unacceptable. Now, I would also point out, by the way, the bill doesn't go far enough because it does not cover rendition, where what we are doing is sending people to places like Syria, Uzbekistan, Egypt, where they are tortured very brutally, And we claim we have no responsibility. We also had our surrogates, the very people who are likely to win this election in Iraq, release 650 prisoners this week where their fingernails were torn out, where they've been subjected to electric shock treatment. So what has happened in this great war on terror is that the United States has the first time been the most prominent nation in the world associated with the use of terror. And what McCain was saying is we've given up the main asset of this society, which is that we represent humane values, and we've joined the camp of those who think that inhuman values are necessary to your security. I would point out that there is no evidence yet that any of the information obtained by torture has been useful. On the contrary, it has misled us, and it certainly misled us in the case of that rendered prisoner in Egypt who told us about the ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, which were false and which were the basis of the president's speeches and when he lied to the Senate and got us the authorization for this war.
Up ahead, domestic spying is back. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer is in Maui on the left. Tony Blankley in Washington on the right. Arianna Huffington with me here in Santa Monica and somewhere beyond. Let's continue on the domestic front. Big news on Friday as we went to air with the Senate rejecting attempts to reauthorize several provisions of the Patriot Act as infringing too much on Americans' privacy, dealing a major defeat to President Bush and Republican leaders. It was, in essence, a threatened filibuster by some of the Democratic senators, and they and some Republicans joined to stop a cloture vote so that this could be reauthorized. This happening at the very moment that the New York Times was putting on its front page the news that not long after the September 11 attacks, President Bush secretly authorized the National Security Agency to eavesdrop on Americans and others in the U.S., to search for evidence for terrorist activity without the usual court-appointed approved warrants that would be required for domestic spying, a major shift in American intelligence gathering practices. What kind of hyper-security state have we moved to? And, I mean, Tony, why shouldn't there be court why do we have to waive court approval? Isn't that really the ultimate safeguard for civil liberties in a way that can balance national security needs?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a secret. The president fully briefed the Intelligence Committee on leadership on both sides of the aisle and the congressional leadership, so it was done in the normal conformity. It wasn't released to the public, but he didn't do it without briefing the relevant leadership. No, the reason why I think this is perfectly sensible is that even when you go to the court for the warrant, you have to show probable cause to believe that the individual to be searched through wiretapping or whatever technical device, there must be probable cause to believe that they are an agent of a foreign government or an international organization such as a terrorist. The problem is that what they've been doing is they've been getting the people who have been on the email or phone lists of known terrorists and have been monitoring those people's conversations. Now, you don't have probable cause, because probable cause means more likely than not. And these are people who are not more likely than not. Nonetheless, they're highly suspect since they've been on the phone list or email list of a known terrorist. So therefore, it's vitally in our interest to monitor their conversations. In fact, according to the New York Times story today, this process saved the Brooklyn Bridge from being destroyed. It stopped a train bombing in London and other methods and other successes that they can't currently talk about. So, yes, I think we have to adjust, obviously, our standards to protect our lives. By the way, it's interesting to note that this book, this article by Jim Risen in the New York Times, precedes by 10 days when his book will be published by Free Press, which is owned by Viacom, and thus we can expect to see the same formula where he'll appear in 60 Minutes. This is a book promotion. It is also, by the way, the reporting of a crime, as the release of this classified information is at least as damaging to our national security Kennedy as he attempt to disclose Ms. Plame's name, and I would hope that we'd have prompt prosecution of the government officials who release this information to the New York Times.
Let me. There's a lot that's interesting in that, but I want to. I mean, see, I agree with the need to extend in reasonable ways this kind of monitoring. I don't disagree with that, but it seems to me we could have definitely written a law or something, an executive order, whatever the right procedure is, that still requires some kind of reviewing body, so it's not solely in pure sort of NSA authority to do this stuff without any other kind of check or balance. And it seems to me it could have been done in a reasonable way, because you're not going to have reasonable judges responding to a new law that asked for a little more leeway, you know, for the extended email list and contact list of people who are known terrorists. Ought to be doable.
But obviously you can't pass anything through Congress, and you couldn't change the statutory requirement that the foreign court have probable cause without a statute. So you have to do it through executive order, which the president did under his inherent powers.
Is this just a book promotion then, Arianna?
This is a little bit like through the looking glass. It is unbelievable that here we are defending a free society, celebrating democracy in Iraq, while we are kind of condoning the kind of practices that, looking back to the 60s and the J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI practices there, have been condemned by everyone of the left and the right. So it is unbelievable to me that we're even...
everyone.
Oh, come on. You know, it is incredible that people...
I'm not condemning this today.
I'm saying you're not condemning what J. Edgar Hoover did in the 60s.
But you can condemn that think that we have to do more monitoring today.
That has nothing to do with what's happening
today.
No, but this is going after foreign terrorists.
It has an enormous amount to do with the fact that if we begin to accept the kind of arbitrary spying on U.S. citizens without any kind of court authorization, without anything except whatever the NSA wants to do for whatever reason. I mean, it is an incredible slippery slope. And I think it basically perpetuates and makes real the kind of rhetorical intimidation of dissent that this administration has been famous for, calling dissenters unpatriotic, saying that they do not support the troops. Now we are seeing evidence that the rhetorical intimidation is actually becoming real, through this form of surveillance and spying that have not been authorized.
But you think that, I want to get Bob in, but you think that there should have been no difference in the standards of what we do after 9/11 in terms of
what you said. I agree that whatever difference there is going to be had to be transparent, and it had to be approved by Congress, by executive order, not without any approval by anybody except bureaucrats.
And to be fair, it doesn't seem like Democrats who knew, as Tony said, who were briefed, have been raising any stink about that. Bob?
Yeah, but first of all, Matt, let me just challenge your assumption here that 9/11 represents a challenge that no country in the world, including our own, has ever faced.
That's not what I said, Bob.
Okay, well, let me restate it. It seems to me you keep saying after 9/11, things may be necessary that weren't necessary before, implying that we didn't have those kinds of challenges before. I would remind you, when J. Edgar Hoover was doing his acts, we thought we had a very serious enemy, or at least our government claimed it did, that we had many weapons, including the ability to obliterate us, and international communism, if not that, then the Soviet Union. And J. Edgar Hoover certainly could cite a threat that seemed far larger, that could destroy all of civilization and certainly our society. So it is not true that our government has not had a justification or excuse, better than justification, for violating civil liberties. And by the way, it is also not true that J. Edgar Hoover didn't think he was going after foreign terrorists. He thought he was going after foreign terrorists when he went after Martin Luther King, or at least he claimed so, because he said Martin Luther King was, when he came out against the war in Vietnam, hobnobbing with people who wanted to do us in and who were foreign terrorists. So that argument has been used by presumably free societies as well, totalitarian societies, was besieged by enemies. And because we're besieged by enemies, we have to strengthen ourselves by violating our own norms and our democratic rights. It's a very familiar argument. There is nothing new about this argument. The argument about the Patriot Act is that temporary powers were granted. They were supposed to expire, those powers. They include powers to monitor people's library cards, what they watch, what movies they rent, and everything else. And a number of Republicans number of Republicans voted against closure, including a few conservative ones, because they said there's no justification for these extraordinary measures. They haven't been shown to improve our security, and they represent a threat to our freedom. And that's the real issue here. But there's never a shortage of would-be tyrants citing threats to security. It's done in every society. And I would point out other societies, for instance, Israel, which is often mentioned on the show. They have enemies. They still manage to be a free society. You know, other societies have been threatened. They've had bombs. The English had the IRA and everything. They still remained a free society. That's really the issue here. Are you made stronger by having free institutions, or are you made weaker?
Don't own Israel, and I don't know the full answer, Tony. Maybe you do, and these are our waning moments. But before we rant, but did Israel and England during the whole long Irish thing, do they have practices different than what we're doing now?
They certainly did during World War II. Both the United States and Britain, under the War Powers Acts of World War II, both Roosevelt and Churchill had power to do this. But I might point out, by the way, for those who bothered to get to the end of last paragraph, about one of the New York Times article, they do happen to mention that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review in November of 2002 upheld the president's inherent constitutional authority to conduct warrantless foreign intelligence surveillance. The only question, thus, is whether this constitutes foreign intelligence surveillance, given that their phone calls from or to foreigners, to people who were on a foreigner's list. And it gets close to the line, but it may well be that it's fully supported by that 2002 Court of Appeals opinion.
Briefly, Ariane.
Well, just anybody with an accent must start getting very scared in this country.
I'm not worried at all.
We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Robert Scheer from Maui, tanned, rested, and ready from the left. It's your soapbox.
By the way, Maui, where I am, actually voted for Dennis Kucinich, so there's a pretty strong pro-peace activist community here. But let me just say, you know, when Bill Clinton fired some cruise missiles into bin Laden's camps in Afghanistan and claimed clamps in Somalia, this was he was accused of trying to divert attention away from the really important issue of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. And, you know, terrorism did not start at 9-11. 9-11 could have been prevented if Bill Clinton had been allowed to more aggressively pursue the very policies that he was pursuing. But at that time, the Republicans said, no, this is just a political sideshow. Now, after 9-11, they claim going after al-Qaeda allows you to do anything that the president wants, no matter how manipulative it is and how threatening it is to our institutions.
Tony Blankley.
I am continually and renewedly shocked at the fact that presumably CIA and NSA and other government officials are leaking classified information, which is a felonious act that undercuts our national security. And it is high time that we start prosecuting these people in the same way that we correctly investigated the leak of the plane identification. We need prosecutors to vigilantly go after these government officials and lock them up as soon as they get them convicted.
Ariana Huffington.
At the same time that we are celebrating this election, the chilling news is that Zarqawi is turning away applicants. There are not enough slots open in his terrorist operation. And that's one of the most tragic things, one of the most tragic outcomes of the war in Iraq. We've turned Iraq into terrorism central.
Well, I want to rant, not rant, but just pay tribute in a non-political way. Maybe other dog lovers out there can understand what it's like when we lost this week our beloved 4-year-old dog, tragically early, named Rosie, who was a true member of the family. And coming as it is, as we're moving into the holiday season, the idea of losing a dog who you're so close to and they become so part of your life and your child's life, it brings a real melancholy to what is otherwise a nice season. And that's all the melancholy we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to my co-hosts, Bob Scheer, Ariana Huffington, and Tony Blankley. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarner, with big assistance on engineering from David Green and Steve Herbert. I'll be on vacation the next 2 weeks, so I will see you on the other side in the new year, wishing you all of you a great new year to them. But our show will be on the next 2 weeks, so do tune in. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Left, Right, and Center.
If you like pajamas.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
Well, we
know we need each other. So we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.